That's Hank Mobley with No Room for Squares. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. It's Monday, January the 28th. And a couple of things to bring to your attention. Senators are announcing today their immigration plan. President Obama is preparing to lay out his immigration plan during a speech in Las Vegas tomorrow, but a bipartisan group of senators this afternoon is announcing a framework they've come up with to address major problems with the nation's immigration system. The plan addresses border security, the ability of businesses to check a person's immigration status, and a streamlined process for future immigrants to enter the United States. It also opens a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants currently living in the United States. The eight senators who have forged the agreement are Democrats Charles Schumer of New York, Dick Durbin of Illinois, Robert Menendez of New Jersey, and Michael Bennett of Colorado, and Republicans John McCain and Jeff Flake of Arizona, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Marco Rubio of Florida. The U.S. Justice Department is reviewing a decision Friday by a federal appellate court that President Obama violated the Constitution when he appointed three people to the National Labor Relations Board last year when the Senate was in recess. A White House spokesman would not say, however, whether this means the president will appeal the decision. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit said the NLRB lacked the quorum required to conduct business. The panel's decision strips the board of key powers and could void some of its actions in more than 200 case rulings it issued last year. The president used a recess appointment also to name Richard Cordray to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's not clear whether the judge's ruling will affect Cordray's appointment. And nearly half of working Americans with college degrees are in jobs for which they are overqualified, a study released today by the nonprofit Center for College Affordability and Productivity says. And the trend, the center says, is likely to continue for the next decade. The number of Americans whose highest academic degree was a bachelor's grew by 25% to 41 million people from 2002 to 2012, statistics released by the Census Bureau just last week said. The number with associate's degrees increased 31%, while the number of Americans for whom the highest level of education attainment was a master's or doctorate degree grew the fastest of all, from 45% and 43%, respectively. That perhaps explains why, according to statistics, 15% of taxi drivers have bachelor's degrees, when only 1% of them had bachelor's degrees in 1970. And retail clerks, 25% today have bachelor's degrees, as opposed to a far smaller number in 2010. So, we are overqualified, according to the study, which means we, for the most part, are underemployed, those who are employed. Well, I know you didn't miss it because the minute the name showed up, you ran to your television sets and said, Yatrice would want me to see this, so I better see it. And I'm referring to that wonderful display, that palsy-walsy, positively giggly interview of the president and the secretary of state. In some cases, it's the same person, but it happened to be two different people this time, the president being Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, the secretary of state, being interviewed on 60 Minutes. It was appalling on any number of levels, but what I'd like you to do is just listen to this excerpt of the palsy-walsy, lovey-dovey, cooing interview aired yesterday.
Hillary Clinton's final days as Secretary of State included one of her most difficult. On Wednesday, she spent more than 5 hours being grilled on Capitol Hill for the security failures in Benghazi that led to the deaths of U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans, the biggest diplomatic disaster of this administration. The accountability review led by Admiral Mike Mullen and Ambassador Thomas Pickering found, among many failures, that Stevens' repeated request for better security never made it to Clinton's desk. And representatives and senators pressed her on whether the administration covered up the nature of the terrorist attack.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job. For a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans. What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
I want to talk about the hearings this week. You had a very long day. Also, how is your health?
Oh, it's great. It's great. Now, you know, I still have some lingering effects from falling on my head and having the blood clot. But, you know, the doctors tell me that that will all recede. And so thankfully, I'm, you know, looking forward to being at full speed.
Right. I noticed your glasses are...
Yeah, I have some lingering effects from the concussion that are decreasing and will disappear. But I have a lot of sympathy now when I pick up the paper and read about an athlete or one of our soldiers who's had traumatic brain injury. I'd never had anything like that in my family. And so, you know, I'm very conscious of how lucky I was.
You said during the hearings, I mean, you've accepted responsibility. You've accepted the very critical findings of Admiral Mullen and Ambassador Pickering. As the New York Times put it, you accepted responsibility but not blame. Do you feel guilty in any way, at a personal level? Do you blame yourself that you didn't know or that you should have known?
Well, Steve, obviously I deeply regret what happened. As I've said many times, I knew Chris Stevens. I sent him there originally. It was a great personal loss to lose him and three other brave Americans. But I also have... looked back and tried to figure out what we could do so that nobody, insofar as possible, would be in this position again. And as the Accountability Review Board pointed out, we did fix responsibility appropriately, and we're taking steps to implement that. But we also live in a dangerous world. And, you know, the people I'm proud to serve and work with in our diplomatic and development personnel ranks, they know it's a dangerous and risky world. We just have to do everything we can to try to make it as secure as possible for them.
I think, you know, one of the things that humbles you as president, I'm sure Hillary feels the same way as Secretary of State, is that you realize that all you can do every single day is to figure out a direction. Make sure that you are working as hard as you can to put people in place where they can succeed. Ask the right questions, shape the right strategy. But it's going to be a team that both succeeds and fails. It's a process of constant improvement because this world is big and it is chaotic. You know, I remember Bob Gates, you know, first thing he said to me, I think maybe first week or two, and he'd obviously been through seven presidents or something, and he says, Mr. President, one thing I can guarantee you is that at this moment, somewhere, somehow, somebody in the federal government is screwing up. And, you know, and so part of what you're trying to do is to constantly improve systems and accountability and transparency to minimize those mistakes and ensure success. It is a dangerous world, and that's part of the reason why we have to continue to get better.
The biggest criticism of this team in the U.S. foreign policy from your political opposition has been what they say an abdication of the United States on the world stage, sort of a reluctance to become involved in another entanglement, an unwillingness, or what seems appears to be an unwillingness to gauge big issues. Syria, for example.
Yeah, well, Muammar Gaddafi probably does not agree with that assessment, or at least if he was around, he wouldn't agree with that assessment. Obviously, yeah, we helped to put together and lay the groundwork for liberating Libya. You know, when it comes to Egypt, I think had it not been for the leadership we showed, you might have seen a different outcome there. But also understanding that we do nobody a service when we leap before we look, where we take on things without having thought through all the consequences of it. And Syria is a classic example of where our involvement, we want to make sure that not only does it enhance U.S. security, but also that it is doing right by the people of Syria and neighbors like Israel that are going to be profoundly affected by it. And so it's true sometimes that we don't just shoot from the hip.
We live not only in a dangerous but an incredibly complicated world right now with many different forces at work, both state-based and non-state, technology and communications. And, you know, I'm older than the president. I don't want to surprise anybody by saying that.
Not by much.
But, you know, I remember some of the speeches of Eisenhower as a young girl. You know, you've got to be careful. You have to be thoughtful. You can't rush in, especially now where it's more complex than it's been in decades. So, yes, are there what we call wicked problems like Syria, which is the one you named? Absolutely. And we are on the side of American values. We're on the side of freedom. We're on the side of the aspirations of all people to have a better life, have the opportunities that we are fortunate to have here. But it's not always easy to perceive exactly what must be done in order to get to that outcome. So, you know, I certainly am grateful for the president's steady hand and hard questions and thoughtful analysis as to what we should and shouldn't do.
You know, there are transitions and transformations taking place all around the world. We are not going to be able to control every aspect of every transition and transformation. Sometimes they're going to go sideways. Sometimes you know, there will be unintended consequences. And our job is to, number one, look after America's security and national interest. But number two, find where are those opportunities where our intervention, our engagement can really make a difference. And to be opportunistic about that. And that's something that I think Hillary has done consistently. I think the team at the State Department's done consistently. And that's what I intend to continue to do over the next 4 years.
Well, are you disgusted? I know I am. But, you know, there is a precedence for this kind of thing. And I had to remember to remind myself about that, because when Brother Bill had his little problem, the Monica Lewinsky problem, hordes of black preachers couldn't wait to get down to Washington, D.C. The call went out and they came down in very impressive numbers to pray him back to the righteous path. And they expiated all of his lustful ardor and brought him back to good, sound Christian values. And, you know, and so Bill Clinton was born again. He had a new life. He actually had a political life that seemed to grow exponentially. He was brought back into the good graces of the American people, and the black preachers did it. Isn't that great? But Hillary, of course, as competitive as she is, she went one better. She had a black president bring her back to life. And there he was, sitting next to his subordinate, who referred to him, and she's not kidding, referred to him as a partner. They're equals, you see, meaning he is equal to her. He is her equal now. But he was sitting there, the President of the United States, offering all kinds of shelter and just, what did she say? She used the word, a steady hand. You know, she thanked him for his steady hand and his analysis and hard questions. Now, that's what condescension sounds like when it comes from the Clintons. She is thanking the President of the United States, who must have had the worst advice in the world, to appear on 60 Minutes, and the report was that he requested it. They didn't even ask him to show up. They called to have an interview with her. And word came from the White House that he wanted to be invited. And for this specific person, he had to stand by the woman who still has not explained what the heck happened in Benghazi. You know, I want to go through the sequence of things in the most recent couple of weeks, because we have a fresh memory. We witnessed this thing happening. I did predict, and it was not all that hard to predict, that she was just not going to testify. She would find a reason to avoid testifying, and so she did. She supposedly fell on her head, and okay, great. However, you would notice a typical, typical Clinton move. She made sure that she was the last person to testify. That's not accidental. She was the last person because you end with a big finish. You know, you come in like the great hero and you clean up. You're the last person to testify. But there's also a legal advantage. As the last person to testify, there's nobody else to come in to be, you know, you don't have to contradict statements of anybody coming behind you. You just testify and that's it. You're not answering the questions. She did not answer the questions. We have the tape of Senator McCain and a number of other people complaining that the answers were woefully inadequate. And there was no doubt that her department screwed up. You can say you accept responsibility all you want, but the fact is, and this is speaking now to the privilege that she enjoyed as a former first lady, among other things, that she is not to be pressed by anybody. She doesn't have to report to anybody. She was downright contemptuous of Congress, the senators, and later in the House, people are asking her questions, and she has her chin propped up as if she's utterly bored with the situation, that she resented the idea of having to account to anybody, to explain anything to anybody, and that she wanted them to know that, in effect, she was actually doing them and the country a favor of making herself available for questioning. And still gave up no answers. She doggedly pursued one line, and that is, we have 4 dead people, it's done. Can't we just get over that already? It's happened, it's done, it's in the past. Now, let's talk about administrative procedures and what we are doing to correct the situation. The panel that conducted this inquiry was named by her. And she was never questioned by the panel. They talked to everybody else except her. She's exempt from that. So even at the point that she was testifying before these 2 committees in the House and in the Senate, it was the first time anybody had actually heard official word from Hillary Clinton, who is supposed to be the great champion of, what did they say, accountability and transparency. The woman, well, don't forget, she is the first lady to be subpoenaed to testify in a criminal proceeding, and she was the likely target of prosecution. And she has been for quite a few times, so she's well-versed in the matter of avoidance. But what she was saying to the country was, and this is not about the Republicans going after a Democrat, this was a genuine outrage that there still is no accountability for the fact that four people lost their lives quite brutally in a gunfight that lasted several hours. And one of them was an ambassador who had been asking for beefed up security and never got it. She continues to say, well, you know, the people who do these kinds of things, I mean, that's not me. I'm really on the global scene. I'm a world person now. And these smaller matters are relegated to my underlings. And look, they've been fired. They're not really fired. They've been, you know, placed on administrative leave. They haven't been fired. And she throws them under the bus and keeps on writing. And this president, who must have the thickest skull in the entire United States, places himself, symbolically, places the nation at her feet on television. No matter what happens, I am a defender of Hillary Clinton. I mean, you really must have, I mean, this is a Harvard grad. This is a guy who has a law degree. You would think he has some common sense somewhere. You mean you're going to be that subversive and subservient and submissive and openly accommodating to something that just ain't smelling right? Hillary Clinton's department has not yet explained its role, not just with respect to Libya and Benghazi, but we do know that what's going on in Mali is a direct result of what went on in Libya. The president said it in this little clip. He says, and he makes a joke at it too, and I'm offended by that. He makes a joke about it. You know, well, you know, there are people who would say that the United States is shirking its responsibility is a sense of the question. And he says, as a joke, and this is a kind of humor that basically bonds him with Hillary Clinton, they're two of a kind. He says, ha, well, Muammar Gaddafi would disagree with that. Ha, 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 ha. Isn't that funny? There's a president of the United States talking this kind of trash. In other words, don't you know we put him out? We put his lights out, you know? We did that. He can't make those accusations anymore. It was this administration that was absolutely involved in the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. It becomes a joke. And none other than the president is making this kind of disgusting, vile statement on national television and pretty much thumping his chest. Muammar Gaddafi and the leader of a country. I don't care what anybody thinks about the leader of the country, okay? Let's talk about it this way. We are as protective of the leader of our country, even if we can't stand his guts. All right? When push comes to shove, he's the leader. Every country feels the same way about its leader. But, you know, to use that as a kind of a, you know, this is humor. This is humor from the president. Muammar Gaddafi would beg to differ kind of thing. Ha, 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 ha. And the person who had the portfolio to see that the country descended into absolute chaos and turmoil is sitting right next to him. And she is thanking him in the way that a president would thank a subordinate. Oh, I thank you for your steady hand and your the hard questions and your analysis. She's sitting next to his boss, to her boss. And he's busy genuflecting, and he's busy just absolutely adoring Hillary Rodham Clinton. What is her great accomplishment? Now, let's be serious. Number one, she was not qualified for the job. She was just not qualified for the job. We all know how she got the job. We all know how she got the job before that. We all know that she got the job of state of U.S. Senator. We all know how she got that. She got that for standing by her man. That's right. And she deserved a consolation prize. So look, we give you a Senate seat. Go get it. People forget that Hillary Clinton actually left the White House 2 years before Bill Clinton did. But that was her prize. Hey. She got her U.S. Senate, and boom, she is already on the track for president. And the same person that she's sitting next to, that two of them are busy, you know, with transparency and accountability and all of that, honesty and good old American forthrightness and whatnot, two of them wanted to kill each other. In fact, she had the most derogatory things to say about the same president. And there he is, just presenting her to the nation and anointing her and giving her credibility that she absolutely does not deserve. She never did. But that is what could happen in this country. No black woman would get that. Absolutely not. Susan Rice didn't get it. Susan Rice is a distant memory. Okay, and I'm not even a fan of Susan Rice, but I'm talking. The president found the wherewithal to go and let the nation know what a stellar person Hillary Rodham Clinton is. So whatever damage she sustained, and she did sustain damage, because the Republicans succeeded at two things that they got done in the course of the questioning. They got her to absolutely own the responsibility for the death of a U.S. ambassador and three other diplomatic workers. They got her to own it. She can't move away from it. So if she should surface in 2016 as a presidential candidate, that's going to be the big link. The second thing is, they got her to see, and they got the nation to understand, that while she was off, you know, breaking the Guinness Book of Records for a number of frequent flyer miles racked up in the course of, these are her duties. This is her job. This is not a personal feat. If that's your job, that's your job. It's not like you have to row your way to Libya, or you have to crank up your own plane in order to fly to Lima, Peru. You're getting the best of everything available to you. And she constantly, well, you know, you went to 120 countries, so she went to 120 countries, so what? But Hillary Clinton was taking care of Hillary Clinton first. So she went on this jaunt, and she's now the world's most traveled Secretary of State and all this nonsense that we're hearing. The fact is, she was not qualified for the job. The woman does not speak any other language but English. Every other Secretary of State is at the very least, bilingual, English and some other language. She had no experience in international relations other than as the tag-along with Bill Clinton when he went on his trips, and she was a co-president of the United States. She muscled her way in. The Clintons muscled their way into the Obama administration, and we have a spineless Obama, unable to call his own shots. He's not his own man. And for the next 4 years, don't look for him to be his own man. He's just not his own man. He's not going to make any major decisions without first getting permission from the boss. Okay, that's the way it is. I'm real clear about it. I expect no miracles from Barack Obama. None. And whatever he does, the priority would be, let me please the so-called middle class. And we know what he said. When he says middle class, we know he's not talking about black folks, Latinos, Asians, and so even we know that. He is there to prove now in the next 4 years that he is a different kind of black guy that you could trust. He's a Harvard grad and all that that means. He's a cultured black guy. Okay? He's a man you could trust because, in fact, he shares your values. This is what he says to that portion of white America that is looking for a different kind of black guy. You know, I share your values. So that's what he's absolutely riveted, absolutely obsessed about, proving how acceptable he is. This was a sickening display of subservience. And it was designed strictly to give Hillary Clinton, to take that bit of the bit of an edge that she got, the grilling that she got, to restore to her the notion that she is the greatest thing since sliced bread to come, you know, through the ranks to save America. This woman is just the best thing ever that happened to the United States, and all the people of the United States and the world should fall at her feet and worship her because she is so great. Infallible Hillary, tireless Hillary, brilliant Hillary, visionary Hillary. Hillary who should have been president a long time ago and we would have been so much better off for it. That Hillary. Barack Obama ought to be ashamed of himself. I am ashamed for him. I'm ashamed for him. You do not ever see a president sitting, being interviewed, in fact, begging to be part of an interview. He wasn't even invited in the first place. You never see a president sit with a subordinate as if they were equals. It just isn't done. It's not proper protocol. This person works for you. Your job is to run the country. Your job is not to do PR, be the flack for Hillary Clinton, but that's what he felt comfortable doing. Atrocious, disgusting, embarrassing. But look, only a week before, Barack Obama apparently has lost all sense of shame. To place his hand on Martin Luther King's Bible and Abraham Lincoln's Bible. Okay, you want to be a Republican. He is a Republican, you know. It's not that he admires Abraham Lincoln because Abraham Lincoln was such a deep thinker. He admires Abraham Lincoln because deep in his heart, he also is a Republican. But he puts his hand on the Bible of Martin Luther King, a man who was assassinated because he was so absolutely committed to ending the war in Vietnam, an unjust war. This president has begun several wars and is continuing to wage war and lying about it. And you put your hand on Martin Luther King's Bible. You don't qualify. You don't qualify for that privilege and that honor. But he is he's operating just like the Clintons. I will not wait for anything to be given to me. I am now entitled to do a whole bunch of things, including I don't have to talk to the Senate, which is why, of course, the court said, hey, fella, you may be, in your mind, you may be omnipotent, but guess what? You will have to talk to the Senate because that's the constitutional requirement. You are to operate with the advice and consent of the Senate. But we have wars declared without advice and consent. We have military action and military incursions going on without advice and consent. Doing the backdoor end run, the way Clinton did, and many presidents before him, we don't have to talk to people. We are the power. We are global, you know. The Senate is too confining. It brings me down to earthly level. I'm above that. I am an entity unto myself. I make the rules. I am that powerful. And you will hear and obey me because I am Barack Obama. I'm a genius. I'm a Harvard grad, I'm smart, and I'm smug. I know the law, I've taught constitutional law. You know I'm brilliant. And if you don't know, I know. And so I could do anything I want to do. I don't have to ask anybody's permission. We're told now that the major target, immediate target is gun control, immigration reform, and healthcare reform. He is not reforming anything. I told you he's at best a tweaker. He's there to tweak. But nowhere are we discussing the central issue, which is jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what you're there for. He has since being elected, he's not even bothering to talk to black folks. Whatever their agendas are, hey, you know, I'll get to you when I can. But in the meantime, let me go on and prove to other people how worthy I am of their support. And I have no problem with various constituencies getting their attention, the attention of the president. That's why, in effect, that's why people vote. They want attention. This president, with the fiscal cliff legislation, was able to pack in hundreds of billions of dollars worth of pork. At the last minute, they slid them in. At the last minute, when they gave the House exactly 6 minutes to review 156 pages of legislation in order to get them to vote. Barack Obama did not object to that procedure at all. That was democracy. He rewarded his friends at, Goldman Sachs and NASCAR and Hollywood and wherever else. He put in the pork himself. And all of the Democrats had their thing going too. The Democrats had their bit of pork, and the Republicans had their bit of pork. Did you hear Barack Obama, the man who's interested in transparency and all of that, did you hear a thorough discussion from this president about the pork barrel projects that were included in this piece of legislation? Has he recalled the legislation and said, these pork barrel projects were not intended for fiscal cliff legislation? They were not intended for approval. So let us revisit this legislation and remove what the congressional budget office says would really be $300 billion worth of pork barrel projects. No, our president is an accommodationist. He could live very well with the Clinton way of doing business because he is a Clintonite himself. I tell you this, people would be insane to believe that Barack Obama in this second term, beginning his fifth year, is going to be about anything progressive, anything that suggests a major overhaul of the social, economic, and economic systems that have strangled America. And the opportunities for hundreds of thousands of people in this country, millions of people in this country. A president who is uncomfortable saying the word poor and poverty dares to put his hand on the Bible of a man whose whole life was devoted to ridding this country and helping other countries rid themselves of poverty. He's there talking about the middle class as if we don't know what he means. But I come back to this scene of President Obama actually being the second person to be asked a question. Okay? That tells you. He's the second person to be asked a question. So at least the questioner, the host of the program, and one of the guests both agreed that this was an A-B conversation. And Mr. C here kept, you know, reminding us, he's sitting there, well, you know, kind of ask him a question or so. Let's see if he has anything to say. But he was not relevant enough to be number one to be asked a question. He's the president of the United States. It is embarrassing. It is beyond embarrassing. And if you're going to go to bat, let's say you're going to go to bat for somebody, you can't find anybody better than Hillary Clinton to go to bat for. I mean, really? Is there such a shortage in the Obama administration that you have to go to bat for one of the most questionable appointments you have ever made, we have ever seen in a while? It fits her resume very nicely. She gets to be the first this and the first that. She was almost the first lady, the first lady to be indicted. How about that as a record? How about that as a first? I tell you, all bets are off. All bets are off. This president shows very poor judgment indeed, and he has done it any number of times. But this past interview on Sunday, posing as some kind of a regular, you know, standard issue fleck, where you show up as the PR guy or the advance guy for some mediocre candidate, and you're going to bat because that's, you understand that to be your job. You understand that to be your duty. And you are the president of the United States. And you just don't have any common sense at all. You know what he needs? Michelle Obama's mother looks like a really smart lady. He needs to be in a padded room with Michelle Obama's mother, and she needs to tell him a thing or two, Chicago style, and bring him to the realm of his senses, okay? This guy's lost his mind. He's lost his ever-loving mind. And what we saw on Sunday was absolute confirmation of it. Well, there's more to come, and we will get into it. We'll actually parse one of these speeches, because Hillary Rodham Clinton's performance before the Senate and the House committees looking into the Benghazi matter was appalling. Absolutely appalling. And again, this is not about the right-wing conspiracy, as you would say. This is about people wanting answers and accountability. Not that they have, you know, that much high ground, but it happens in this situation, they were absolutely correct to demand answers. The woman refused to give any answers, and the president is backing up the lawlessness. The president is the one endorsing this kind of behavior, because he knows he is not in control. Hillary is in control of him. He's not in control of Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. They control him. In the world of, you know, scuzz bucket politics, Barack Obama is a neophyte. The Clintons are seasoned professionals at this thing. He is just getting wet behind those protruding ears. He'll find out at some point, because this is going to blow up on him. I hope he's ready. I want to thank you for listening to my little spiel here today. Of course, we'll get back to this tomorrow. I just needed to get this off my chest because it was just disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting and objectionable on so many fronts. But, you know, that little quip about, yeah, ha, 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 Muammar Gaddafi ain't saying that anymore, ha, ha, ha. That's the level at which our president is functioning in public. He has no shame. And there's nothing you could predict that a person without shame won't do. You can't predict what next they will do, because it's apparently they will do just about anything to serve their purposes. Coming up next, you want to stay tuned, is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. I want to thank you for being with me today. You can continue the conversation at leadstories@gmail.com. And thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.